One of the regrets that I have from my childhood is that, even though we lived north of New York City, I almost never went there. I can count it on one hand how many times in my teenage years I actually ventured down into the city. Looking back and finding out what was going on, I regret it even more. But one of the rare times I did go down there, it was at my behest, begging my family to take me. And I think I'd like to talk about it. It was the time that I went to an off-Broadway theater production about hackers. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, William Hearn, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Stick with me here. The play, which was about hackers, was called Hackers. It was created by Mike Eisenberg, a MIT computer science graduate. It appears to have been his main and only play. He wrote it while still at MIT, and I don't know how I first found out that this was going on. It had made some news because it was a computer-themed play in 1984. Naturally, I really wanted to go. This comes from a time when media about computers, or more specifically, about the experience of computers, was relatively rare. There were movies that had deadly dangerous computers that were, at best, abstract. But there wasn't anything that used computers as the backdrop for a human experience. Just one thing, though. I hadn't been to many stage productions at that point. Back in 1983, my father took me to my first Broadway show. It was Merlin, starring Doug Henning, a retelling of the tale of King Arthur from the point of view of the magician, with an excuse for him to do endless magic tricks. I found out later that this was the first Broadway production for a young Nathan Lane, who went on to quite a career on Broadway. I'd been up in the mezzanine watching this show full of all sorts of special effects and trickery, and I sort of thought that's what Broadway was. I'll just say that Merlin was a magic show with a little bit of a Broadway production draped over it like a cloth. It was not a standard musical. However, being brought to this theater at the age of 12, going up through these really beautiful old stairs, and looking down on this stage play, two things happened. First, I thought this was how all stage plays happened in New York City, and second of all, I knew I was going to enjoy it. Depending on how much you know about me, it's either really surprising or no surprise at all, my love for musicals. Absolutely love them, can't get enough of them, can sing entire songs from memory of all of my favorite hits. When opportunity presents itself, when tickets are cheap, I love going to Broadway musicals. I've attended dozens. It's been so rewarding and it touches so much of the showman in my heart. Back in 1984, with one Broadway musical under my belt, all I knew is I wanted to go back down there to that city and see this play about hackers. Two people stepped forward, my father and his sister, my Aunt Susan. Aunt Susan is such an important influence in my life. She was and is a wild spirit, a laugh that lights up the room. When I visited her apartment, it was a classic 1970s pad. Lava lamp, waterbed, beautiful prints, mirror with stripes on it, everything that I thought was literally groovy and cool before it became ironic to use those words. At the time when my father had a used sunfish boat that he had bought for $250, my Aunt Susan sunk her teacher's salary into buying a motorboat with twin 350 horsepower engines named Modern Girl. And the one or two times I went on the Hudson River with her, we basically were firing a rocket on water. She also shared a rare and unique power with both of her sisters in being able to call my father Bobby. Aunt Susan stepped forward and said she would accompany us down to New York City. In 1984, I was 13. I didn't know anything. I loved computers, but other than that, it got a little bit hazy. I had just come out of a school that I didn't like. I was now living in a town and attending a school that I did like. And due to living with my father, I had the top half of the house to myself, which I had filled with all sorts of computer toys and printouts and everything else that took my interest. We drove down to New York City, the three of us, with me totally open to whatever this show was going to be. I had no idea what the plot was. All I cared about were that my beloved computers were getting their chance to be on stage. The theater we went to, which was the Lion Theater, I had to look that up, was on 42nd Street. But the first shock came for me when I discovered how very small it was. We lined up, and when the doors opened, we were pretty much in the theater. It was a couple hundred seats at most, and we sat about halfway up, but that might as well have been in the lap of the actors. When I saw the stage, I knew we'd made the right choice. It was a computer center in the basement of a college with, to me, realistic-looking screens and keyboards and design that told me this was going to cover just what I wanted to cover. There was a screen in the theater to the upper right, which told us about different acts and titles, and at the time I didn't understand that it was projection, but I was just taking it all in. This was different than a musical. This was a straight-up stage performance. I'll outline the play in the most general of senses. It's about four computer students, one of them recently new to the computer center, so we kind of learn everything through him. There's a hacker who considers himself the greatest in the world, and he intends to beat the Turing test. Another older hacker is making a text adventure about his entire life, and there's a PhD student who is working on what she hopes will be the world's best chess computer. What goes on for the rest of the play are interactions between everyone about the philosophy of computers and what it all means, what a Turing test represents and why it's the ultimate goal. There's a little bit of intrigue, there's humor, there's sadness. By the end of it, everyone has changed a little bit, sometimes for the better, sometimes for worse. The toughest character is the hacker who's trying to beat the Turing test. He's there in almost every scene. He absolutely is pushing himself to the mental limit, and he's going a little bit crazy trying to go over what makes us human and how to emulate it, how to put all of himself into this computer and then beating this test for worldwide acclaim. The PhD student and her chess program is coming up against sexism, institutions, and trying to make her dream project happen. And there's lots of philosophy about what life is for in the text adventure being made by the graduate student. And yeah, if a play that focuses on a text adventure and an emulator sounds like it's up my alley, well, you're right. Processing the play for a 12-year-old is a little tough. Two characters hook up. Some of them talk about really deep ideas about what life is about, where we're going, what it means. Most of the time, we're laughing at how the hackers act or making fun of different terms. Many of them I had never heard. I'd not really been ensconced in MIT hacker culture then, although I did find myself at MIT and doing a movie with MIT hackers some years later. What is a somewhat adult-themed play to a kid? Well, I know this play set off a fascination, a lifelong fascination, with the technical aspects of putting on a production. The screen that showed us when the acts were changing made noise and everything would pan down and we would see the screen tell us that it was Act 5, Act 6, intermission. The way that people moved around the stage, the design fit into this small theater to make it look like a computer data center, but of course it wasn't. All of this fascinated me as much as the script. After all, a lot of things we do on computers or in life are basically staging, being given a limited amount of area, coming up with what makes the most use of that area, and then presenting it to others as best we can. There's really no functional difference between putting out the set for a play and setting up the worlds and rooms for a text adventure, or deciding what interviews and which ideas need to go into your movie to tell a story. I loved it. I was so happy about this. My aunt told me she got about half of it. My father, of course, had probably seen people like this at work, although he made it sound like plays weren't his thing, and really honestly, they never have been. It was great that they brought me there to 42nd Street in 1984 and let me experience this thing, this dream I had. They listened to what I really wanted and gave me that indulgence of attending an obscure play in the middle of the city. About 15 or 20 years later, I'm now living in Massachusetts. I've been to MIT. I've walked its halls. I've known hackers like this. I've also done lots of research into the world of computers. And I'm always coming up with weird ideas for projects. And it suddenly occurred to me, wouldn't it be neat to take that old hacker's play I remember back in the 80s and put it on? I've never directed or involved myself in a theater production beyond being in one or two in college. It's just never been somewhere I'd been, and I thought, well, here's the perfect time to try it. Get this play, read it over, convert it to a stage production, and put it on. It sounded like a fun thing to do. Let me veer off for just a moment. One of my favorite side hobbies is roughly planning logistically difficult things. I find the mental exercise really invigorating. I love trying to figure out, well, people have only done 5 of this. Why can't we do 1,000? How is that involved? What do we need? Are there ways to do it cheaper, faster, more completely than anyone ever has? What would that involve? The idea of putting on a hacker-themed play and all of the different attendant difficulties was irresistible. The way that you get your hands on most plays, especially if they've been done in some sort of union fashion, is that there are houses, publishing houses, where you can pick up the original script to read through it. There are considerations to be done in terms of payment. If you put on one of these plays, there's usually a cost in the script, literally written into the script, over how much you can charge and how much has to go back to the writer and whoever owns the rights to this play. And once the script arrived, I read through it voraciously. This was the part of me that was a movie maker, thinking of what would go on the stage, did I know people who could play different parts, trying to turn these words back into reality. Only one problem. I finished the script, and it suddenly occurred to me, I didn't like it as much as I thought. Sure, there's actors who could make anything sing, but this was a difficult play to put on. The characters were a little bit outdated. The plot points seem almost minuscule compared to the modern world. What was shocking and interesting in 1983 had become either commonplace or irrelevant by the time I was looking at it. Plus, I think, I had changed. I wasn't 13 anymore. I was 33. The newness of seeing something I loved, computers, being portrayed in a cultural way. There were computer movies and songs and musicals that had come out in all the intervening years that I had loved or thought were stupid or thought captured a little bit of it, but not everything. We'd been there. Having a computer on the stage wasn't going to push us over this hill. I thought about changing up the script. I thought about other changes I could do. This was a lot of work to come up with something that probably a small number of people would really want to go to. It's traditional to say I made the hardest decision not to do it. But deciding to not do something is often the easiest decision, to take no action. The only part that's hard is if you never imagined a world in which you wouldn't do it. But it wasn't hard for me. I was different, the world was different, and these words on a page were exactly the same. That happy 13-year-old, sitting in his best idea of what formal clothing is, with his eyes open, experiencing a play and watching actors act about things he cared about, that kid was still in me. He found wonder. He found joy. He had lived a life that was beautiful. But there was no reason, honestly, no reason to make a feeble attempt to capture that brilliant moment again. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Mark Pilgrim, James Bekoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me stay out of debt. My show notes always have links to things that I discuss, and I'll have links to where to buy or view parts of this play, but for somebody who just finds the MP3 somewhere, the author's name is Mike Eisenberg. The play's name is Hackers. It came out in 1984. It played at the Lion Theater on 42nd Street, and walking through New York City in 1984, when you're 13 years old, is magic on earth.